Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Happy Monday morning. It is B. Mitch and Finley. Toby Altizer in for JP all week alongside Brian Mitchell. We got plenty of stuff to get into throughout the day. We got plenty of people joining the show. Bobby Blanco going to join the show coming up at 10:30. We got Chris Miller coming up at noon. Mark Zuckerman coming up at 1:30. Obviously, plenty to talk about. But B. Mitch, first, how was your holiday weekend?
Oh, man, I had a great holiday weekend. Hung out with the two grandkids and my grandson has already learned how to manipulate people. So I wake up in the morning, and he's up around 7. That's when he knows, 6, 7, 7, he gets up. And as soon as he sees me, he go walk, and he says, shoes. So I put his shoes on, and I'm like, dude, you're not walking. I'm putting you in a stroller and pushing you. So if you're leaving out the house, he wants to get his tennis shoes or his shoes on. And you go put him in the damn stroller because he likes to be outside. And my little granddaughter, just the prettiest thing in the world. So I couldn't say no to either one of them. So that's how it was.
What were you cooking up on 4th of July?
Oh, man. So let's see. The day before, we did a shrimp boil. And then on the 4th of July, all we did was like fried catfish and salad and potato salad. Then Saturday, we barbecued. So we did chicken, ribs, burgers, dogs, salmon, and lamb chops.
Everything you could want.
We hooked it up. Well, I hooked it up. You know, the other dudes just sat around and watched me cook.
It sounds like some good food, though. I would have been down for that.
We had a good time, man. It was fun. Drove back yesterday from North Carolina all the way to Fredericksburg. It rained. Then it stopped. There was no rain around the house. You know, and then all of a sudden, boom, today I was driving in, it was raining, it got into D.C., it was no rain.
It's been weird, these little pockets that keep popping up.
Well, it says a tropical storm was coming through North Carolina, which I expect to come up here, you know, but it was, I'm talking about, it was real rain down there, dog.
Yeah, I mean, it was
the rain
weird.
Where you got, if you see 50 cars, every car had the hazards on going slow.
It was weird. Yesterday, I was at Nationals Park. Obviously, we're going to get into the Nationals here in just a second. But
we're going to get into them.
They had like a 17-minute rain delay, which is very, very short. But it was because it started sprinkling. You felt it, I think, in the second inning. You started to feel some of the sprinkles. And then all of a sudden, it was heavy enough that the grounds crew had to come out, make sure that the field didn't get unplayable in that time frame. You know how it is. You get some of those that are just torrential, but it only lasts for a few minutes.
Yeah. It comes in and leaves, but that's this time of the year, man. I tell everybody, once you hit beyond 2:30, at this time, you can expect some type of rain. And especially out that way where I live in Centerville, I'm going home, you can see the darkness coming from the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
And that cold air hit that warm air, it's going to have a thunderstorm. So I see a lot of them in the, during this time of the year. That's why I really don't like this exact time. Where you're sitting there, you want to go play golf all day, and we get off at 2, and it's going to be raining by 3.
So big news yesterday for the Washington Nationals. We might as well get right into it. So yesterday I was at Nationals Park and watched the game, and I was expecting, honestly, the Nationals to get crushed because Garrett Crochet was on the hill. Shinosuke Ogasawara, we'll talk a little bit about him, I'm sure, at some point. He was making his major league debut for the Nationals, the first pitcher they'd signed from Japan. And it didn't go great for Shinosuke. Gave up 4 runs in the first inning. He ends up getting pulled in the 3rd inning. Maybe wasn't as bad as you would think. And they actually got to Garrett Crochet. But this is how crazy it got for about an hour and a half period, B-Mitch. Around 4:45 is when the Nats game wrapped up. They get swept by the Red Sox. They lose 6-4. You knew that they were announcing All-Stars at about 5:30. And so at that point, by the time that the thing was wrapping up, the show on ESPN. James Wood and Mackenzie Gore are both going to the All-Star game. So you got the roller coaster of getting swept by the Red Sox.
Right.
You're down. About 45 minutes later, you get James Wood and Mackenzie Gore named to the All-Star game. And less than an hour later, you get the report from Jeff Passan that Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez were both fired.
Yeah.
So in the course of an hour and a half, you went from getting swept to two of your guys that are the cornerstones of the franchise getting named All-Stars to the general manager and the manager being fired. Just a roller coaster of a day for Nats.
It's a roller coaster. Well, I can tell you this. I didn't get the alert that James Wood them were going to the All-Star game, but I did get the alert that the two people were released. I'm riding down the highway, and my watch went, bzz, bzz, and I just happened to look, and I saw Nats release. And I'm like, okay, so let me see what this is. So I hit the little thing, and I said, oh, okay then. So my immediate thought was, and I don't know if people would agree with this, this is nothing that was told to me or nothing like that. This is just, I think about how things work a lot. Rizzo hired Davey. And every time someone asked Rizzo about Davey, he kept saying, well, he won us a World Series here. That also puts a feather in your cap. So I think they got to a point where, okay, you're not going to let him go. We're going to let both of y'all go. And I know we'll talk to JP a little bit later, and I know JP always says that Rizzo was the best general manager in this area. So I started thinking about it a little bit. Is that very hard to say? When you had Ernie, you had Vinny, you had Bruce, Ron was partially one. I think the Cavs general manager has always been stable. But when you compare him to people that had no success, is that saying a lot? And listen, I understand the business of professional sports. Hell, I was in it. You can be great in your past, but they're not going to keep you around just because of your past. You have to be doing it today. And you and I were talking before we started. It's never been a good bullpen.
Mm-mm.
For the last 20 years, hasn't been a good bullpen.
Even when they won the World Series.
You had some great starters, but your bullpen sucked. Okay? That is something that's been a thing that goes with him a long time. So when you don't have those starters, you get what you're getting right now. But Mackenzie Gore has had a marvelous year. But once he leaves the game leaves too. Because you put the other stuff in there and nothing happens. And eventually, hell, Andy Reid left Philly. Bill Belichick left New England. Great coaches get released. You know, great GMs get released if things get stagnant. And right now with this group, now we don't know if the guy that they put as the interim GM is going to work. And I can say one thing to the learners. All fingers are pointing at you now. You can't sit up. You fired Davey. You fired Rizzo. But now they're going to say, what the hell are the owners doing? Because nobody is going to – this new guy, DeBartolo, his name, Bartolo, mm-hmm. They're not giving him – they're not going to expect him to come in and be great. He's been here under Rizzo, okay? So if he – when he steps in, they don't have enough experience for people to automatically throw everything to him. It's in y'all laps. Let's see if y'all going to be able to lead this thing.
100%. And it's just crazy to see the change in all of this because they entered the month of June, B-Mitch, just two games under 500. They were 28-30. In the month of June, they went 7-19.
Mm-hmm.
Since that stretch now, they're 9-23, and they're 37-53 overall. And so any sort of move from a ball club that is 37-53 shouldn't be shocking because this is a wins and losses business. And I thought Barry Sferluga had a really, really good piece written about this last night. He was on with the Junkies earlier, kind of alluded to this as well, that there was a vibe, and after he mentioned it, I could kind of see it in my interactions over there as well, that there was a vibe of comfortability. And when you get too comfortable in professional sports, you get mm-hmm. complacent.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there was this, they didn't have an urgency about them. And so when you have stretches like this, and you continue to lose, there's not any sort of motivation to get out of it. There's not any sort of motivation to get back in the win column like it used to be. I mean,
it's like a lack of accountability.
Yeah, 100%. It used to be that when you'd come on this radio station, you could break down every single game because wins and losses mattered. You could talk, you know, hey, I didn't like that pitching change last night, or hey, I didn't like this lineup decision. Not say you're doing that every day, but you could do that. When's the last time we've talked about an individual game for the Nationals on this station?
None.
It hasn't been a long time because it doesn't matter, because it individual games don't matter.
I think also when the focus becomes what's happening off the field more, it lets you know it's time for a change. We haven't been talking about the games as much as we've been talking about what Davey said, what Rizzo needs to do. Are they going to change? But I'm very surprised by the timing.
100%. That's the shocking part of it.
Right now, you can't tell me DeBartolo, like, let's say you and I work together. Hell, we're working together. What am I talking about? And you have a lot of information, and I listen to what you're saying. I have a lot of information. Listen to me. I don't know it like you know it, and you don't know my stuff like I know it.
Mm-hmm.
DeBartolo don't know all that stuff how Rizzo and his crew does. You know what I'm saying? They were leading, and I'm sure he was around, but he may not know it all. But as Landfield and I were talking earlier, Landfield stated, the drafting hadn't been great over the last 10 years any damn way.
No.
Over a decade. And now, do they expect this dude to jump in with his lack of experience and all of a sudden just do it right? Now, the youthfulness may bring a little something into it. You know, people, old school dudes have a mindset, you know, and maybe just a fresh mindset may change up the trajectory of this squad.
So when Ken Rosenthal wrote that piece kind of scathing about the Nationals, what was that, about a month ago or so? Mm-hmm. And we were having extended discussions about this and where the Nationals were in terms of their rebuild and as an organization. The thing that I said then was they have to look in the mirror and make a decision on how they're going to operate.
Yeah.
And I think this is an opportunity for them to finally make that decision. Now, that's all it is. It's an opportunity. It's not saying they made the correct decision. It's not saying that they're going to make the correct decision. You know, if Mike DeBartolo's not ultimately the guy, or even if he is. They needed to look in the mirror and decide how they were going to operate. Mike Rizzo, to me, is a big market general manager, and he very well may find another job somewhere else, and he might be successful somewhere else, because I think you can look through Mike Rizzo's tenure and you can find good. You can also find plenty of bad. And so to me, when you look at the things that he excelled at, that's things that big market general managers need to be good at. He was good at the trades, and that's something that he's always been really, really good at. You can look and find a few. You know, we can talk about the Scherzer-Turner deal, whether that's good or not. But for every Scherzer-Turner deal, there's, you know, getting Lane Thomas for John Lester and turning Lane Thomas into a nice piece. And obviously, we can talk about three All-Stars now coming back in the Juan Soto trade. His ability in the trade market was fantastic. I think when he was given the resources, he was good at signing free agents. Max Scherzer, look at the conversation when he was signed here. Mm-hmm. It was, this is the worst pitcher contract of all time, this and that, and we're going to look back at that as maybe the greatest free agent pitcher contract up until this point in history. You look at Patrick Corbin. I know over the course of his contract he wasn't great. They don't win the World Series in 2019 without Patrick Corbin.
Yeah.
And so I think when you look at those sorts of things, that's what a big market general manager needs to excel at, and I think he did that. The issue is, this team started operating as a small market following the World Series in 2019, and Mike Rizzo does not operate well as a small market general manager because the onus then is put on drafting and development.
They don't coincide. They don't work well together.
And I don't know.
I got to spend some money, and you don't want to spend some money.
So see, here's
I
where
can't
I think
build
it's,
a team like that.
Here's where I think it's interesting, because we talk about, you know, whether they're going to operate as a small market or not, and I'm not sure they're given the resources to do so. Because as much as we're talking about the on-field product, right, like it's pretty obvious to look at payroll. Is it a Mike Rizzo issue that they didn't have that pitching machine that we were talking about last week with Spencer Nussbaum, I believe, on the station here, talking about this specific machine that they didn't have that so many other teams, and you talked about not having the resources. Is that a Rizzo thing or is that a learner thing? I would lean to think that Rizzo has no issue having that machine, and that's probably a learner thing.
Yeah.
So what's to make me think that they have the necessary resources in the scouting department, in the development department? And so, look, has Rizzo been good at the draft and develop? Absolutely not. Has he been given the resources? I can't answer that.
Well, the thing of it, though, you're not going to fire the owner. The owner can't fire himself.
Right.
So you know what happens next. So I would say this. At this point, fans, we were clamoring. A lot of people clamoring for David to be gone. When after he made the comment about it, you can't blame the coaches. Well, now, put that pressure on your ownership. Make your ownership understand D.C. is not small market.
It's not.
And if you're gonna, if you're not selling the damn team, spend some damn money. Okay? That's the mindset. Because I think people have to understand when you tell someone, we're not going to support you, but you show up every day, you're supporting them. You have to make them understand that, you know what? You can't be a owner and live off of what happened in 2019. Okay? You got to, we want another one. Let's go get another. Hell, Dan Snyder ran through here and was showing all these trophies that he had nothing to do with. He's gone. And now you see things moving in a different direction. Maybe, just maybe, the ultimate thing, we always say things start from the top, starts from the head. The head is ownership. Maybe ownership has to change for things to get better over there.
100%. 100%. And I think that's the big question in all of this, because moving on from Rizzo, I think there's mixed feelings around the fan base. I think a majority of people are probably on board with it. There are still plenty of Rizzo supporters as well. I don't think there's as many.
People look at the end result. Are we winning? No.
Exactly.
Okay,
I don't think
you can't blame one set. You got to blame everybody. From ownership on down, it's somebody that's messing up.
And I don't think that, you know, there's as many Davey supporters. Look, you're always going to be thankful for 2019, but that was a long, long time ago. The big question, to your point, B. Mitch, is, now that you move on from Rizzo and Davey, does that mean that ownership is going to change the onus? I tweeted a little bit of a poll last night, got 460 votes, so not comprehensive, but a little bit of a sample size. Do you have faith that with the firings of Rizzo and Martinez that ownership will seriously invest in the team now? The overwhelming majority, 93.9%, said no. And I guarantee if we got thousands and thousands of vote, it would still be 90% no. Mm-hmm. And that's the issue, is just because you move on from Rizzo, just because you move on from Davey, doesn't suddenly mean that all of this is going to change. I think it opens the door, because to me, like you said, ownership can't get fired. And so continuing down the same vicious cycle of Davey is the manager and Mike Rizzo is the general manager and the learners owning the team was just never going to turn the corner. Because if they were going to, it would have been this year when you have James Wood as an all-star and potential MVP candidate, Mackenzie Gore as in the Cy Young conversation and an all-star, C.J. Abrams having a really good season, and you're still 16 games under 500 entering the second week of July. So something needed to change. And if ownership's not going to change and something else needed to change, they ultimately decide it's going to be Rizzo and Davey Martinez. We'll see if they end up making some meaningful changes to the way that they operate. If not, then maybe we're just having the same conversation over and over again about whoever takes over because ownership doesn't make the serious investment that they absolutely need. We're going to get into some of your phone calls in just a little bit, but coming up next, Bobby Blanco from MassinSports.com. He's going to join us to break this all down. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley on The Fan.
Does your home need a little help before you sell it? Short on funds? Don't throw in the towel. Talk to our friend John Leahy. He can help you tee up your home for a market by getting up to $50,000 to make those repairs and upgrades, making your home irresistible to buyers and getting you more money. Just settle up with John at closing. Listen, we had some buyers that loved their little home and neighborhood, and they were quite sentimentally attached to it. They were also stressed with needing to relocate back to D.C. very soon. The property is located in the tricky market of North Bend, Maryland. The buyer pool wasn't very big, the home is older, and has a strange layout. So the buyers were worried that they'd be stuck with the property for a really long time. Just days before Christmas, Robin from John Leahy's team with the Fine Living Group put their home on the market. By pairing deep market knowledge with a data-driven pricing strategy, Robin positioned the property exactly where buyers could see its great value. Showings rolled in, and even during the holiday lull, and within weeks, a contract was secured. And at that point, it was at full asking price, well ahead of the seller's deadline. If you're looking to sell, take advantage of John Leahy and the Fine Living Group's guaranteed offer. Start by finding out what your home is worth in only 30 seconds at johnsellsdmv.com. We're talking about our good friend, John Leahy and the Fine Living Group. John offers you flexible fees customized to your needs, and he knows that life happens. So if needed, he will let you out of your contract at any time. And that's why we think John is the DMV MVP of real estate. Call John today at 301-900-3052 or hit him online at johnsellsdmv.com. Or even easier, just Google John Leahy Group. That's John without an H and start.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, B. Mitch and Finley. Toby Altizer in for JP all week. It's time to get it to out to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Welcome in our friend from MassinSports.com, and that is Bobby Blanco. Bobby, what's going on, dude?
Toby, B. Mitch, what's going on? Busy couple hours last night. Sitting here on my vacation, and my phone starts popping off to some good news from the Nationals and then to some shocking news from the Nationals. So, yeah, hanging in there.
Did it shock you that they let both of them go?
Yeah, and then in the moment, I mean, it's a Sunday night. I think you're getting the All-Star game, All-Star rosters announced. The Nationals get elected two in for the first time since 2021, which was like basically the last time his team was actually competitive. Two of the guys that were in that Juan Soto deal from 2022, and you know, that should have been like a very happy moment for this franchise, for this organization. That was should be considered a win for, you know, former general manager Mike Rizzo and company, that two of the guys they acquired from that trade deadline are now all-stars, elected all-stars, and CJ Abrams was one last year. So now you have three of the five prospects already making all-star teams just a couple years after they came over in the biggest trade in Major League history. And then like an hour later, yeah, we get the news that Mike Rizzo and David Martinez have been let go by ownership group. They're going to go in a different direction. This comes literally like a week to the minute almost of when the Nationals are going to be selecting in the number one overall pick in the draft next Sunday night. And then we're just weeks away from the trade deadline. The timing, I think last night was pretty shocking, but then the more you think about like the logistics of it all, it kind of makes more sense. But when you're in the moment, you're just thinking, oh my God, like what is happening right now?
Well, and that's what I've said, is a 37-53 ball club, any sort of move short of trading James Wood makes sense, whether it's firing a hitting coach, firing a pitching coach, firing the manager, even firing the general manager. It's more so a week before the draft. Do you get a sense of why this was the timing right now?
Yeah, I think that for me, I mean, like I said, last night in the moment, shock. And then the more you kind of think about it, let the shock go away, think about it, you dig deep, you kind of reach out to some people, you read some other things. And for me, it kind of makes a little more sense if the ownership group had decided over this weekend, whether it was right after the game yesterday or Friday night or Saturday, whatever it was, that we're going to move in a different direction at some point. You know, both Mike and Davey had contract options that need to be picked up at some point this month. So if you've already decided that you're not picking those up, why drag them along for the next couple of weeks? Why have Rizzo then head up this draft, which is a very important draft selection in a week? And why have Davey just kind of sit around as a lame duck for a couple of weeks when you know that you're either going to fire them at the end of the month when that contract is up, or you're going to tell them, hey, we're not picking it up, and you're just going to kind of sit. I mean, to me, it's just more of a business move. We're like, well, we know we're not moving forward with these two guys, so let's just cut the cord now. They kept as far as I can tell, they kept the scouting department intact. So, you know, Danny Haas, Brett Ciolek, those guys are still going to be in charge of this upcoming draft pick. You know, it will be interesting to see how they go. I know that in the past, these guys had just guided. This is only their second draft, believe it or not. So, you know, they've got time to kind of prove their mettle. But, you know, in the past, you know, Rizzo kind of did have the final say in the draft selection, and we could talk about that later as well. But so the timing is kind of odd, but I think it's from a pure business standpoint. If you know you're not moving forward with either of these two guys, then why drag them along, and why have Rizzo make this pick coming up next week when you know he's not going to be in the future? In your future plans to develop this guy, and you know, maybe whoever you do have in the future wants someone else, and they have a better plan to develop it. Who knows? But like, the more I thought about it, the more from a business standpoint, from a learner's perspective, it did kind of make sense to do it now. And then they also just got swept at home to a Red Sox team, so that, you know, I mean, like, it's obviously a frustrating time for the franchise.
Well, they had someone in mind, and they made DeBartolo the interim coach. I mean, interim GM. They had nobody in mind till, I guess they're going to name that today, the interim manager of the team.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of makes me think where, what if you know you're going to let go, why you don't have anybody in mind? It just seemed like it was something hastily done. And I had a thought, I was just telling Toby, this is my mindset. Did they go to Rizzo and say, you need to let Davey go, and he refused.
Yeah, I've seen that theory tossed around too. I'm not quite ready to buy that just yet. I mean, Mike and Davey are super close, super tight, good friends. I just don't have. I mean, but we've seen Rizzo fire managers that he was, you know, close with before. Now, obviously, no one has been around as long as Davey has. He's the longest tenured manager the Nationals have ever had since moving back to D.C. But, you know, I just don't get the sense that, you know, if Rizzo was given an opportunity to keep his job and like, hey, you have the draft, you have the deadline, and you have the rest of the season to save your job, I don't know why he wouldn't, you know, take that just for the sake, you know, of Davey's job too. Maybe he did. Maybe he did fall on that sword and you know, Rizzo is, you know, Davey's best friend in all of this. But like, I don't, that would kind of surprise me. And I would, you know, tip my cap to Rizzo to being, you know, that good of a person and that good of a friend to Davey, but that would be kind of shocking to me. And you're right, it does seem a little hasty that they fire the manager and don't know who's going to take up next, but it also could have been a logistical thing. We know like the top two candidates are Miguel Cairo, the bench coach, and then Matt LeCroy, the AAA manager. Maybe it was a logistical thing where like, well, they wanted to talk to each of them and see if they even be interested, so we're not ready to announce. Like, we've already talked to DiBartolo knowing that he's ready to step in. We're not quite sure if LeCroy or Cairo are ready to step in because, one, I mean, Cairo and the rest of that coaching staff are all very close with Davey. They're all handpicked by him to be on his coaching staff. They're all friends with him. So it might be awkward for them to step up into his role after he was fired. And then, two, you know, for LeCroy, he's up in Rochester or wherever they are this weekend. So, you know, it might be a logistical thing of what he doesn't want to do it or, you know, he got to make sure they can get him to St. Louis and yada, 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 yada. So, you know, it could have been that as well, but I'm not quite sure I'm ready to say that that was the case unless we hear otherwise a definitive that, yeah, that was the case where they told Mike he had to fire Davey and he refused.
Talking with Bobby Blanco from MassinSports.com here on the Rude Guest Hotline. It'll be Mitch and Finley, Toby Altizer in for JP this week. Bobby, do you get a sense that things are going to change over there in terms of the way that they operate, whether it is the owners opening the checkbooks and you're spending in free agency or even organizationally in the way that they operate in the front office where they become more analytically driven? And maybe it's not going to be this second half of the year with DiBartolo taking over. Maybe it's going to be, you know, whenever they hire a new general manager, if it's DiBartolo or someone else. But do you get a sense that, you know, this was something that they're actually going to change course in the way that they operate? Or is this the message that maybe runs stale with Rizzo and Davey?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the million-dollar question. The more I thought about last night, Toby, about, like, all right, who's going to step in or who would they look to, the ownership group look to be the next full-time GM and the next full-time manager, like my brain keeps getting scrambled because, like, that's not really the question we should be asking. The question we should be asking is how are this ownership group going to operate moving forward? Are they going to operate – are they going to go back to being a major market team like they were for so many years and, you know, having a top 10 payroll because they are in a major market, you know, or are they going to continue doing this cost saving approach to the baseball roster and how they develop players? And if, you know, I'm not saying one is good, one is bad. I'm just saying they have to decide that. And once you decide that, then you can move forward. Okay, then, you know, if we're sticking with a major market approach, then let's go pick, you know, the top assistant from the Dodgers or the Yankees, someone who has been doing that for a long time with a team that spends money and knows how to operate like that. Or if you're going to say, well, let's, you know, we want to be a little more cost saving and be more frugal and smart about this, then go get the top guy from the Tampa Bay Rays or the Cleveland Guardians, small market teams that have had a long history of success in drafting and developing players and acquiring players at a low cost. So that is really the main question for me that I think the ownership group needs to find out over these coming months before the end of the season. And then when they conduct their lengthy search in this off season, because it is hard to tell whether or not they are, you know, changing their direction or their approach to, you know, owning a baseball team without answering that first. Because it, you know, when you fire the GM and the manager in the middle of the season, albeit, you know, this was a very disappointing season, there's still a lot of questions to be answered in terms of how this ownership group is going to continue operating the organization.
Well, now I think people understand this. We can't worry about, is it the manager or the general manager? Well, if they move on and they stay the same, it's ownership. Because you got to spend to get to where you want to go.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think you can make that draw that line too. But yeah, and that's the other thing too. It's like I think back to like the losing streak, and you know, you can also argue that this timing doesn't make sense. I get that. The timing to make this move probably would have been during that losing streak in June when they lost 11 straight.
Yeah.
But my thought process always was, you know, if you're going to make a change, I would, I personally would have, and I'm not calling for anyone's job. You know, I know a lot of these coaches are, you know, are professional and personal level. So it's like, but I'm just saying the way this usually goes about is that you start by making changes on the lower levels of the coaching staff, mm-hmm. you know, pitching coach, hitting coach, you know, strategic development coach, whatever it may be, and work your way up. If those small changes still don't result into big changes on the field, then you go, okay, then, you know, we need to make a move at the manager position. Then I make a move at the GM. They went straight to the two head guys. So, I think that is kind of putting, you know, the ball in ownership's court. It's like, okay, well, you know, you're putting, by doing this, you're essentially putting the blame on those two guys, and now you're assuming all the blame by making these large decisions. So, mm-hmm. again, it kind of goes back to my previous answer. It's like, now you've got to kind of, you know, decide how you're going to go about this, and you know, it's got to be the right way, or else, you know, the fan base is going to get very upset, because the fan base was told at spring training that this team was ready to compete. And now clearly they're having a, you know, a down season, and by making these big changes, you might be setting back this rebuild, retooling, whatever they want to call it, another year or two, which is another disappointing factor that some fans might have to realize.
Bobby, appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the rest of your vacation, and this abrupt news that seemed to interrupt it for you.
Yeah. Well, gonna keep an eye out for whoever the name is, the manager this afternoon or tonight, and we'll go from there. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Appreciate it, Bobby. That was Bobby Blanco. He joined us on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We'll open up the phone lines. Also want to take a look at Mike Rizzo's draft history a week out from the draft, now coming up on next Sunday. They fire him a week out from the draft. Is it maybe a good thing that they move on for Mike Rizzo? Also, if you want to hop in, was it the right move to fire Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez? 800-636-1067. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday you'll hear us and see us chatting with big name celebrities.
And every Monday you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
The fan. Appreciate Bobby Blanco for joining us. If you missed that, you can podcast it. Always use the rewind feature on your Odyssey app as well. Toby Altizer in for JP all week on B. Mitch and Finley. And we got plenty to talk about today with the Nationals yesterday firing general manager Mike Rizzo and manager Davey Martinez. It is curious, B. Mitch, to do that a week out from the draft, the draft coming up next Sunday, and the Nationals have the number one overall selection. And it is curious to fire that, the general manager, 1 week ahead of that. But at the same point, look at their history.
Is there a consensus number one?
There's not a consensus. I'd say it's a debate between two guys. So there's a left-handed pitcher that pitched really well in the College World Series, Cade Anderson from LSU, who's up there. And then Ethan Holliday, Matt Holliday's son, Jackson Holliday's brother, is the other one, a high school bat coming out of Stillwater. I think it's one of those two. There's some other guys that maybe you could throw in the mix there, but it's probably one of those two guys at number one.
The mindset would be, who do you need the most? You seem to have bats right now. You need some more pitching. You get a left-handed pitcher that could be legit, you want that in your system.
I lean Holliday, personally, but I don't think either one's a wrong answer. But
if you got a lot of bats and no pitching, like right now you got one pitcher, okay, and you have no run support. You get another bat, does he fall into line with everybody else and you have that pitcher? Or do you get another pitcher now where you can start having, instead of every 5 days you get Gore coming, every five games Gore comes in and give you a masterful pitch, you can have a guy that does it. You have Gore and you have another guy, and which also takes a little pressure off the bats to be perfect.
So when you look at how the Nationals have drafted, I'm trying to figure out where they got this data, but someone had tweeted out this from yesterday, that part of the reason you move on from Mike Rizzo is his inability to draft and develop guys. And when you look at WAR from players that they had drafted and signed and guys that had helped out this team since 2012 till now, and the WAR that they've accumulated, wins above replacement.
Mm-hmm.
The Nationals are dead last, and it's not even close.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, number one
it's
on this
way,
list.
Way less.
Number one on this list is 134.9, the Houston Astros. If we get towards the middle of this list, the Milwaukee Brewers are at 61. If you get towards the bottom of this list, let's say the 25th team or so, the Red Sox somewhere around there, around 34.7. I'll give you a guess, B. Mitch. Where do you think the Nationals are in terms of they're dead last? Well, how much do you think they've accumulated?
Probably about 10.
Down.
5.
4.3.
Damn.
For example, James Wood this season has accumulated 4.5, according to Baseball Reference.
Damn.
So, and it's a counting stat. So, for example, Dylan Cruz already has a half WAR this year. So, if you had that 9 times over, then you would have had more than the Nationals have had since 2012.
That's crazy.
And Dylan Cruz is batting sub 200 this year, B-Mitch. Uh-huh. If you play good defense and hit right around the Mendoza line, you could get enough WAR that you could eclipse this from two guys in 2 years.
But see, that's the thing where people don't look at. When you're looking at these stats, there are stats that can tell you, like, oh, great, great, great general manager. But that stat right there says, oh, boy, have they been picking the right people? You know, you immediately go to that question. Have they been picking the right people?
They have not. I don't think there's any question that they haven't.
At this point now, listen, there are reasons that they can fire the two people that they fired.
100%. And I
but
think
also, they are going to have to realize and look in the mirror that these guys can't work miracles without the proper backing.
Correct. 100%.
You know, you're going to have to give them enough. Now, the drafting is not about spending money. The draft is about making the right decision. And you can't just go with a person, oh, I like this guy. No, you better make sure that guy can make that step.
And that's where the big indictment is on Mike Rizzo because, frankly, like we talked about, signing I think he did fine when he was given the resources. Mm-hmm. And, yes, you can look at the last couple of years, but when you're handcuffed so much, there's going to be hit and miss when you have a small margin to work with.
Yeah.
But when he had the opportunity to sign a guy like Max Scherzer, he went out and did it. So I'm fine with that. Trades, he was really good at. But the problem is, the reason that some of these teams are consistently able to be at the top of the sport is because even if they're not able to sign someone, usually they are because like a Dodgers, they just open up the checkbook, but also they develop their talent and they draft well. And when you look at the Nationals, the last time they had a guy that you would consider a success that helped their ball club in the draft would be 2014 with Eric Fetty. And it's not as if Eric Fetty was great. So if we go back to, let's just go back to 2012. Or let's go back all the way to Strasburg. So Strasburg in 2009, Drew Storen as well. Strasburg was a hit, obviously. And that's one that I don't know how much credit you get for getting Steven Strasburg when he was the consensus number one. And me and you could have made that draft.
And he was good.
He was good. Bryce Harper was the next year. And again, they hit. How much credit do you get for that when you and I could have made that draft pick? I don't know. 2011, Anthony Rendon, I think they get some credit for that. They developed him. Mm-hmm. After that, it's Alex Meyer, fail. Brian Goodwin, fail. Lucas Giolito, he helped you in the trade to get Adam Eaton, which helped win the World Series. Okay, that works out fine. Eric Fetty, he was okay, but that's not enough for a first-round pick. Carter Kieboom was never good enough. Dane Dunning was part of a trade, but again, still not great, even when Seth Romero didn't work out. Mason Denneberg is playing college football right now. He went back and is playing college football.
Wow.
That didn't work out. Jackson Rutledge is in the bullpen right now with an ERA over 6. Cade Cavalli's pitched in one career game, and even he's trying to rehab back. Brady House is in the bigs. We'll see. Maybe they have developed someone there. We'll see. Elijah Green went from high A. Usually you go from rookie to A ball to high A. He went from high A to rookie ball because he was striking out 50% of the time.
Damn.
Dylan Cruz, I know how Lamphill feels, but there's still a jury out on Dylan Cruz.
Yeah, still there.
Seaver King, we'll see how that ends up playing, but they decided to go under slot at the 10th pick, but there's a guy that was drafted 4 picks later, B-Mitch, that's in the big leagues with an OPS over 800 right now in Cam Smith.
Mm.
They opted to go with this guy so that they could sign Luke Dickerson later. Might look like the wrong play. The point is, if you can't draft and develop, then that's how you end up in this spot. Because when Anthony Rendon left, Carter Kieboom was supposed to step in. He was nothing. Yeah. So when, you know, whoever left, Bryce Harper, whoever, they had a couple of guys in like Soto and Rendon. But outside of that, they had no one that ever stepped in. That's how you end up in the spot where, like, we talk about this with the Commanders. When the new guy stepped in with Peters and Quinn, the cupboard was bare. They had Terry McLaurin and what else, really?
Yeah, basically.
And that's why they had to replace the whole thing. That's kind of how the Nationals were. And that's Mike Rizzo's fault because he wasn't able to draft and develop. Yeah. No, he wasn't given the resources to sign guys. But why would you sign guys when the rest of the roster is just so bad?
Yeah. Yeah, point. I mean, hey, man. At this point, they made the decision. And now they need to hire the right people. DeBartolo, I don't know if he's a guy.
Yeah.
No one knows if he's a guy. But if they were to put all of that this in his lap, he better be the guy. You know, the next guy they hire is a manager. Who is he going to be? It's going to be a guy that's experienced, or you going to bring somebody else in that? Because an experienced guy coming here may not want to just take orders from a guy with no experience like DeBartolo.
800-636-1067. Did the Nationals make the right move in firing Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez? We'll get to some of your phone calls next. I also want to talk to you, B. Mitch, about what something that we mentioned a little bit earlier about Barry Svrluga, saying that it felt like the team had gotten a little bit complacent and comfortable and maybe lacked that urgency. I want to talk to you as a former professional athlete about how that can be in a locker room, in a clubhouse. We'll talk about that next. John B. Mitch and Finley.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.